Blog Talk Radio.
Delving past the headlines, sorting through the media bias, exposing the propaganda, and challenging you to use your brain. It's time to tap into the truth.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed time to tap into the truth. Coming to you as always, this is your host, Tim Tapp, from historic Roane County, Tennessee, bringing you a show this particular week that's just jam-packed full of information. We actually had a lot of things go on this past week, not the least of which we'll start off with just announced. There is a recall that you may be interested in. This is being based out of New Orleans. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says that Louisiana-based meatpacking company has expanded a recall of meat products because of possible bacterial contamination. At this point, no illnesses have been reported, but the Amanda Packing Company recall announced this past week now includes over 468,000 pounds of roast beef, ham, turkey, pork, ham steaks, hog head cheese, corned beef, and pastrami. The Agriculture Department said Friday that the products were recalled because of a possible contamination with listeria. The products were shipped to retailers in Alabama, Arkansas, Florida, Georgia, Illinois, Kentucky, Louisiana, Mississippi, Missouri, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Tennessee, and Texas. The USDA Food Safety and Inspection Service listed 8 types of meat sold under 41 different names with various sell-by dates. Its news release said some of the products may have been sliced at retail delis, and if so, will not bear packaging information. The statements posted Saturday on the company's website said that the recalled meats were produced at their facility in Baker, Louisiana, between February 27th and April 9th. The USDA said eating food contaminated with listeria can cause listeriosis, an uncommon but potentially fatal disease. Healthy people rarely contract listerias, in this statement, but the disease can be serious and sometimes fatal for those with weakened immune systems, and it can cause miscarriages and stillbirths. They were quoted as saying, "We are committed to work with the USDA in reviewing and enhancing our food safety system so we can continue to ensure that our products are safe, wholesome, and worthy of our brand name." That was quoted from Josh Yarbrough, Director of Quality Assurance for Amanda, and that was released yesterday in a statement. Now, that's probably something that everyone out there ought to be made aware of, so I went ahead and led with that. Seems pretty important that if you buy any of those products, you need to know. Coming from a food safety background, as I do, I know listeria is nothing to play around with, and that does seem like a rather large window for something to have been going on and to just now being caught. So if you have purchased any of those items recently, it would be important to check their website and cross-reference that with as many of the products you have currently as possible. All right. Now, also in this very busy news week, let me go ahead and start out by saying I was almost appalled when I found out that the occupier, Barack Hussein Obama, this week was going to be delegating yet another one of his few job responsibilities that he seems to take serious, step back and not give the weekly address. It further infuriated me that I actually received an email, and I'm going to go ahead and read that email to you right now. This supposedly from Barack, obviously he approved it. It starts by saying, "Hello, everybody. Each week, like many presidents before me, I sit down to record a short address to the nation. It's something I take very seriously because it offers a chance to bring focus to an issue that needs to be part of the national dialogue. But today, I've asked someone else to take my place. Francine Wheeler is a mother. She and her family live in Newtown, Connecticut. 4 months ago, her six-year-old son, Ben, was murdered in his elementary school, along with 19 other children and six brave educators. Joined by her husband, David, Francine shares her perspective about the steps we can take to reduce gun violence and prevent the kind of tragedy she understands all too well. It's a message that every American should hear. At that point, they include a link to see the video, as of course it will be undoubtedly made as soon as the remarks are made. It'll certainly be out there and available for you to get. Then it continues with this week, because people like Francine and like you got involved, the U.S. Senate took a step forward on common sense reforms to reduce gun violence. And that's good, because this shouldn't be about politics. This is about doing the right thing for families that have been torn apart by gun violence, and for all families going forward. But we've got a lot of work to do before Congress finishes the job. So, if you believe that we can take sensible steps to protect more of our kids from gun violence and protect our Second Amendment rights, stand up and join us. And then it also has another link, this time to the whitehouse.gov website. And then, of course, finishes with, thanks, President Obama. Now, this would be a lot easier to believe if it wasn't for the fact that we know that these guys are not interested in reducing gun violence. It goes back as simple as looking at why is the legal drinking age 21 when the average age of your typical drunk driver is between 25 and 35. They're going after weapons that are not typically used in the majority of actual gun violence. More to the point, they're now going after magazines, they're going after backdoor varieties and methods of ways to try and control your guns by attacking what it takes for you to be able to get ammunition, for what it takes for you to be able to own a clip, what it takes for you and to have your privacy invaded by being put on national registries that no matter how much they try to keep it secret, well, these databases will not remain secret. And I'm pretty sure we all know that that is simply the way it's going to be. This isn't about prevention of gun violence, and I think we all pretty much know that at this point. In fact, what it's really about has a lot to do not with stopping gun violence, but in protecting those people that want to move forward with a very different agenda. In fact, for those of you who question it, listen very carefully to this soundbite from Vice President Joe Biden. This speech was made back on the 5th of this month. Give it a listen.
The affirmative task we have now is to actually create a new world order, because the global order is changing again. And the institutions and the rules that worked so well in the post-World War II era for decades, they need to be strengthened, and some have to be changed. So we have to do what we do best. We have to lead. We have to lead. We have to update the global rules of the road. We have to do it in a way that maximizes benefits for everyone, because obviously it's overwhelmingly in our interest. This is not a zero-sum game. It's overwhelmingly in our interest that China prosper, that Mongolia prosper, that nations big and large, east and west. We have to level the playing field so that American companies and workers can compete in the world. that the competition is fair and it's healthy.
All right, so now we have an audio clip where Uncle Joe actually comes out and tells us that it is not only been the plan for a while, evidently, but now they're brave and bold enough to come out and say it. It's time for us to create the New World Order. Now, ordinarily, this is something that would fall under my conspiracy corner portion of the shows, where we can talk about this, but when he's coming out in broad daylight, so to speak, I mean, you can always count on Uncle Joe to say a few really, really smart things when he gets an opportunity to speak. And usually, he ends up letting the cat out of the bag more often than not. And sometimes I think that's by design. I definitely think that there is a huge number of people that are, at this point, testing the waters. They want to see if we're really awake. They want to see if we're paying attention. They want to know how much they can get away with, how far they can push it, and see what kind of response they get. We had another great example of that this week with Melissa Harris Perry's Lean Forward promo, which we'll get to that a little bit later in the show. I will play the soundbite for that promo, and we can discuss that too. But ultimately, what we have to beware of is the fact that this New World Order business no longer falls into the category of conspiracy theory. There's no question this has become conspiracy fact. Vice President Joe Biden on April 5th of this year, out of these troubled times, our fifth objective, a new world order, can emerge. That came from President George H.W. Bush on September 11th, 1990. We saw deteriorations where there should have been positive movement towards a new world order. Mikhail Gorbachev, October 19, 2011. I think that his, Obama's, task will be to develop an overall strategy for America in this period, when really a new world order can be created. It's a great opportunity. Henry Kissinger, January 5, 2009. These are all people who are in the know. These are all people who are inside the political machine. They are very much aware of what's going on at a national level. I would like to ask Joe Biden exactly who it is he's leveling the playing field for, and exactly how it is he thinks they're going to accomplish leveling the playing field. Whose best interest is it really in? The average, everyday American patriot, or the so-called progressives, who are no more than useful idiots for the most part, who believe because of their intellectual superiority that they will obviously be part of the bourgeois class and that they will be safe from whatever dangers befall them. At either rate, they're sadly mistaken and very confused, because ultimately the useful idiots are still nothing more to the top 2% in the New World Order than the rest of us are. And that's just it, just idiots. And once their usefulness is done, they'll get cut loose. Of course, they don't recognize that. They don't see that. They don't understand it. When we come back from this quick little break, we'll talk about how these values are being pushed even further in the U.S. Army. We'll be right back.
Tap into the truth. Listen in live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog posts and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yes, that's right. Every Sunday at 3 p.m., just like we're broadcasting right this very minute. For those of you who are local listeners, let me go ahead and remind you again right now. If you haven't had the opportunity, let me recommend that you stop by First Baptist Church of Rockwood, Tennessee, and spend some time watching a program that they're putting on, Lucifer Lies. It's a very good program. It's worth your time. If you're the least bit interested in Christian belief at all, you're going to have some fun with this show. It has just the right mix of scary with the peaceful hope of following Christianity. Those shows start every Sunday this month at 4 p.m. and again at 7 p.m. So, of course, I'm not suggesting you stop listening to my show to go down there and watch it. But, you know, bottom line is you can always come back and listen to this show on demand. And while we're talking about on demand, if you happen to be listening here directly on Blog Talk Radio at the website, feel free to go ahead and follow the show right now while you're here. Don't forget about it. Now, back to the topics at hand. We were getting to the story recently leaked. A combat battalion commander assigned to the 101st Airborne Division at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, sent an email out to several dozen subordinate officers and senior non-commissioned officers describing conservatives as members of hate groups. The senior officer has also been shown in YouTube videos doing his review, so you can seek him out on YouTube if you're interested in looking him up. But he decided that his ignorant soldiers needed some political indoctrination regarding the Army's new values, of course, as decreed by the occupier. So, using the infamous Southern Poverty Law Center as a guide, the lieutenant colonel set out to educate. Using the subject line of domestic hate groups, Lieutenant Colonel Jack Rich warned his subordinate leaders that many events have been taking place across the country. Just want to ensure everyone is somewhat educated on some of the groups out there that do not share our Army values. Now, before identifying for his troops who the haters in America are, he makes it clear that his email is an action memo. So what that means is he doesn't want you to just read this and forget it. He wants you to accept what he's telling you in this and to follow the direction as an order. This is an action memo. Goes on to say, when we see behaviors that are inconsistent with Army values, don't just walk by, do the right thing, and address the concern before it becomes a problem. In other words, this misguided Army leader is telling his junior officers that they are to actively intervene with any of their troops that they suspect have hateful beliefs. Once identified, the hater presumably will be forced to recant such beliefs. And in case that sounds familiar, there's a reason. Turn back your clock to the Cold War years, and you might mistake Lieutenant Colonel Rich for a political commissar, the Soviet ideological officer who guarded military units against harmful beliefs. So who exactly belongs to a hate group? Well, according to Commissar Rich's email, and, of course, his buddies over at the Southern Poverty Law Center, they include just about every American out there that even is remotely conservative. But it includes some other folks, too. They lay out in the emails members of Christian Right. For example, Focus on the Family former leader James Dobson. Anti-gay groups, which by his definition is those who oppose the so-called homosexual agenda. Members of patriot organizations, and according to his definition there, those who are opposed to the New World Order, those who believe that the New World Order is imposing a global plan called Agenda 21 to take away citizens' property rights. Those who believe that their being will be armed is a must. Those who fear impending gun control and weapons confiscation, either by the governments or by international agencies. I'm going to take a minute right there, and I'm going to point out how that is another obvious attempt. We talked a little bit last week about how the term conspiracy theory gets used to try and immediately discredit this, but to try and throw in New World Order with Agenda 21 and act like Agenda 21 is made up, that goes beyond the realm of asinine, because anybody who takes the time to look up the UN plan, Agenda 21 is very much real, and it is being utilized at the community and at the state levels right now throughout this country. Generally, it's being done at the city and county levels so that nobody really pays much attention to it. The idea that if you believe that the New World Order is imposing a global plan called Agenda 21, that you're somehow wrong, well, that's wrong in and of itself. There's no question. There's no doubt. Agenda 21 is very much real, and it's being fought right now by patriots all across the country. If you're concerned about gun control, that does make you a patriot. It does not make you a terrorist. You have a Second Amendment right to own and bear arms, period, end of discussion. And if you're not concerned about the possibility of weapon confiscation now or later, you should be. Let's not forget that the recently passed arms treaty that the UN passed, that we will now be very shortly looking at ratifying here in the United States, in fact, would give the executive branch the authority to create new gun control laws just by executive fiat, and would have the backing of UN forces to enforce them. So just in case, unlike this particular lieutenant colonel that we're talking about, who obviously is not putting his oath above orders, when the majority of our military who does hold to oath before orders refuses the order to enforce these type of executive fiats, Obama would, or whoever may follow Obama, would have the legal authority through the ratification to call on UN troops to come do it. So this isn't a matter of somebody believing that these are going on. This is a matter of this guy trying to tell his officers to brainwash their soldiers into believing that if you believe any of that, you're the nut job, and they have to stop you. All right, enough of that rant. Continuing on, anti-Muslim groups are also on his little rant here. Those who broadly defame Islam, those who believe the inherent danger to America posed by its Muslim American community, that Muslims are a fifth column intent on undermining and eventually replacing American democracy and Western civilization with Islamic despotism. Those who allege that Muslims are trying to subvert the rule of law by imposing on Americans their own Islamic legal system, Sharia law. Really? That's made up too? These people just believe it? Lieutenant Colonel, how about you addressing the reason why anyone would believe this? Because for crying out loud, this is happening. There are several cases in Florida and in Michigan, and even a couple of cases here in Tennessee, where because certain events took place within Islamic communities, they have petitioned the judge for Sharia law to be applicable in the court case as opposed to the actual standing U.S. law. Why? Because under Sharia law, they get away with heinous acts just because the prophet has been disrespected in some fashion. It's hard to believe that somebody wearing a U.S. uniform would not, in fact, be concerned in the event that Sharia law would be put in place over the military code of conduct. I mean, that is essentially the basis you have, Lieutenant Colonel, for placing this order, is it not? This action memo. Also on the list made anti-illegal alien groups. Commissar Rich identifies the Family Research Council, the American Family Association, United States Justice Foundation, Atlas Shrugs, Sharia Awareness Network, Bare Naked Islam, and many other organizations as hate groups. Yes, the thought police have infected the U.S. military. Never mind that troublesome First Amendment. The occupier must be proud. For those of you who are interested, this report actually comes from Joe Miller, although you can find it in a few other places. The full email and the entire list of people that are identified, including black separatist groups, also make this list, a few others, but it's just some of the names. And the reason I mentioned these names as anti-illegal alien groups is because I've had dealings myself with the Family Research Center, with Atlas Shrugs, and with the United States Justice Foundation. And with all these groups, I do not find hate being part of their organization. It's certainly not their motivation. A desire to keep Americans educated on what's going on, yeah, that's there. Now, I haven't had dealings with, but have heard of things that the Sharia Awareness Network have done, and I have spent some time on Bare Naked Islam's website reading different stories and various reports. And yes, while they are, shall I say, aggressive in how they report the stories, there is still no question whatsoever that their true interest is in keeping Americans aware of what the mainstream media is not telling you about. Now, let's take another quick break, and when we get back from that, we'll discuss Barack's budget. We'll be right back.
Tap into the truth. Listen in live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog posts and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yes, that's right. Every Sunday at 3 p.m., we get started right here on Tap Into the Truth at Blog Talk Radio. While you're checking out the website, tapintothetruth.com, feel free to check out our other media outlet and our other shows. There are links directly to the show page, and then some of the most recent shows are also available via Player. There is, of course, a player at the very top of the page that will take you to any of the episodes here at Blog Talk. And again, let me remind you, while you're here listening, go ahead and follow this show here. You can follow the show over at our other media outlets. Please go ahead and like us on Facebook and start following us on Twitter. We'll do our best to keep you informed on the busier days, and we'll do our best to be as entertaining as we can while we do it. Now, let's talk a little bit about Obama's budget before we get into the biggest stories that I plan on covering today, two of which expose the media bias in a way that ordinarily we don't get to talk about. But let's talk about this first. Don't you like how I do the teasers? Obama's budget's more than 2 months late to start with, okay? This is a constitutional requirement. Sorry that the multiple vacations and getting the trip to Israel, where you once again managed to diss one of our closest allies, even in your effort to make the trip, And, of course, getting your brackets in, your NCAA brackets turned in before you left, all of that took so much time that you just flat out didn't have time to do a budget. Well, again, I think it's an impeachable offense whenever you do anything in this job that is outside of the constitutional requirements. So if you're not going to try to impeach this gentleman for the high crime of failing to follow the Constitution, I guess there's just no reason to even think the possibility of an impeachment's possible. Obviously, nobody wants to bother with it, despite the fact that the man should use more Social Security numbers than a truckload of illegals working out of a Southern California town. This guy is untrustworthy. He has more aliases than freaking Jennifer Garner on the TV show of that name. I mean, it's insane that this guy continues to get away with flaunting the U.S. Constitution. And he will go out and talk about, we need gun control, but there's no mention of the literally millions of children slaughtered each year through abortion on demand. Anyway, there are some key topics. First of all, of course, you know the Republicans would never like anything that the Occupier put forth, but as it turns out, a lot of Democrats didn't like it either. Personally, I don't care much for it because it leaves a $744 billion deficit tacked on again for just next year alone. There's $800 billion in new taxes, and the thing will never balance, not once. Not even an attempt to balance anywhere down the road. So that's why I don't like it. But Obama's budget overtures to the Republicans may limit his bargaining power if the GOP ever return to the negotiating table on the grand deficit reduction deal. In essence, Obama's spending blueprint is a final offer, a no-budge budget whose central elements have failed to persuade Republicans in the past. By voluntarily putting entitlement cuts on the table, particularly a proposal to slow the rise of Social Security benefits, the occupier has no other gambit to win tax increases from Republicans. With many Democrats balking at the idea of what he's already offered, it's not politically feasible for him to offer the GOP anything else. The occupier, of course, finally released his budget. And according to all the experts that I've talked to, it's pretty much a joke in the first place. When you take the time to analyze the mounds of new spending and the spending being put forth in education and manufacturing and clean energy and infrastructure and small business, interesting to see that he thinks he's got some small business stuff going on. It comes out that there really are only five key things that you need to keep in mind. I mean, the occupier didn't stop at more of the same failed stimulus and cylinder-type policies, but he piled on tax increases, including on seniors, the poor, and the middle class. But those five things that you really have to keep in mind is, number one, it hikes taxes by more than $1.1 trillion. There was little doubt that Obama would propose huge tax hikes in his budget, but it was a bit surprising, however, that the total tax increase he proposed was almost double what he claims it to be. I mean, he talks about instituting the Buffett rule, capping tax deductions and hiking the cigarette tax and increasing the death tax. That's the biggest places where these additional taxes are coming from. And while there's a movement underway at most state levels to do away with the death tax, now you have the feds coming to try and increase. The number two thing that you need to keep in mind about his budget – is it underfunds defensive spending. While boosting domestic spending, the occupier remains indifferent to national security needs. He proposed defensive spending, though somewhat higher than the sequestration levels, these levels remain woefully inadequate. The result's going to be a defensive posture that is too small in terms of both personnel and force structure. It does not include modernizing weapons or equipment, and it does not provide adequate levels of training and maintenance. And there was nothing worse, ladies and gentlemen, than sending in our brave men and women in uniforms into hot zones where they're going to have their mettle tested without having them adequately trained. There's nothing worse than sending them out there without having them adequately equipped, to have their equipment maintained properly. These are all extremely important things when it comes to military use, and we need to be prepared. Now, if you want to cut spending from the budget, there are probably several places where you could cut military spending and not affect any of these programs. The problem is nobody wants to make those cuts. The number three thing you need to keep in mind is that it doubles down on Obamacare. The Obama budget actually expands parts of Obamacare and even includes new changes to Medicaid to create two sneaky new taxes on seniors. Obamacare's new entitlements, its health insurance subsidies, and the Medicaid expansion, both are slated to start in 2014. With the implementation, the misnamed Affordable Care Act will add a distinctly unaffordable $1.8 trillion in federal spending through 2023. Equally important, Obamacare commandeers the healthcare sector with a massive program that further distorts the market, intrudes on the doctor-patient relationship, and dismisses personal and religious liberties, all of which is severe flaunt and disregard to the United States Constitution. The fourth thing you need to keep in mind is that it does not balance and never will. Because the budget never balances, it doesn't even try. Debt remains at dangerously elevated levels. Now, if you want to take the time to look it up, the internet has several places. I would recommend you start at the Heritage Foundation and let them actually show you a comprehensive comparison between the Obama budget, the House budget, and the Senate budget, all of which are woefully inadequate, and we deserve better. But the fifth and quite possibly the most important thing you need to remember about the Obama budget this year is that the occupiers' budget is more than 2 months late, like I said. So the House and Senate have already passed their own budgets, and the next step is for the two chambers to come together to see if they can hash out a single budget that both chambers can pass. So at this point, why is the occupier even bothering? Well, that's an excellent question, except for the fact that at least if he does turn one in late, nobody can say he didn't do it. He gets some level of political capital by standing firm and saying, yes, we have done this. Here it is. This is my agenda. And he knows it's not going to garner. He has never offered a budget yet that has ever gotten a single vote for it. He just hasn't. Why can the Democrats not vote for him? Well, because there are some things in there that the Republicans would just like too much. So the Democrats can't vote for it. The House budget this year, normally I am very big fan of Paul Ryan. I like his numbers. I like the fact that he uses math and facts and figures, and he knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. I like that about him. But unfortunately, he kept some of Obama's taxes in place with his budget despite completely defunding what those taxes were initially meant for. That is a concern to me. The Republican Party fought tooth and nail to avoid those taxes and eventually lost those fights. So why would you then leave them in place with your own budget without leaving what they're intended to work for? I don't know. I mean, that's something that you'll have to tell me, because I flat out do not understand why you would do that. So, but again, all three of these ridiculous excuses for a budget are exactly that. They're ridiculous excuses for a budget. I don't see how anybody in their right mind can offer these things up and pretend even for a second that it makes sense. At some point, I mean, the Obama argument here, when he was asked if this budget would ever balance, and he was asked this in his press conference when he announced it, and you know, he came up with this excuse, and this is the party line now. We've seen it on all the Sunday shows at this point. The bottom line is, as they say, it doesn't have to balance. Our budget never has to balance. We just have to get our spending more in line with gross national product. And as long as we can keep our revenues to where we can continue to afford to spend it, that's really all that matters. That's the equivalent of you and me, ladies and gentlemen, sitting around our house trying to decide, as long as we can keep our credit limit increasing and then we don't actually ever have to do more than pay the minimum balance, and they'll keep giving us credit and we can keep using our credit cards. Well, you know, most of us who have had credit cards for a while and who've tried doing that find out that it all comes crashing down. That's a major, major issue. On a unrelated topic, let's go to a little bit of the lighter side. This is offbeat news. I'm sure several of you were aware and noticed that there was, in fact, a walkout of fast food, or as I refer to it, quick service. I have a background in quick service, that's why I refer to it that way. There was a walkout by fast food workers in New York City. This became a bit of a hoorah when the Fox and Friends folks kind of demeaned it a little bit the next morning. Several liberals were a bit upset with how they talked about it. But, you know, here's the thing. Right now, New York State, these fast food workers, most of them are making close to minimum wage in New York State. And the reason I point out New York State is because that's where this walkout happened. You had a lot of unions trying to unionize these workers, for because a lot of fast food folks aren't unionized. A lot of unions are losing membership left and right, and this is a good place for them to try to bolster those numbers. So make no mistake, we know what's going on here. They did this walkout, and they were making $7.25 an hour. Again, I point out in New York State, because there are states that have higher than the national minimum wage. New York State is set at $7.25 an hour. That's the minimum wage. Now, a lot of these folks walked out. They were demanding $15 an hour. Now, just so you know, guys, you can go ahead. You can start calling in, and we can talk about what we've talked about so far. Or you can bring up something else. Those call-in numbers, toll-free line is 1-888-287-5313. Or if you have Skype or a great cell phone where you don't have to worry about long-distance charges, I'd ask you to go ahead and call us at 1-347-426-3550. And, you know, you can comment about any of these things that we're talking about right now. And as we continue to go on, feel free to give us a call. I would like to know if there's anybody out there that honestly feels like somebody who is doing a job like quick service, whether you're a cashier, whether you're in the back doing the French fries, or whether you're a maintenance person. You could actually probably make the argument for the maintenance people. But if you're one of these entry-level, I'm flipping the burgers on the grill, I'm taking your money at the cash register. Is there anybody out there that really thinks somebody at this level deserves $15 an hour to do that? And if so, let me ask you how much you think you're going to be paying for that Mickey D's burger if they were paying everybody in the restaurant $15 an hour to do it. Now, it may very well just be a tactic of saying, okay, we're going to save 15 and we're going to hope to end somewhere in the middle. Well, that's not going to happen, folks, because number one, you're still in a recession. The Occupiers Administration keeps trying to point out to the fact that, oh, no, we're recovering. I have a feeling a lot of you folks that are working these quick service jobs right now are doing so because you lost your better job and you haven't been able to find something better yet. And, yeah, it would be lovely if we lived in a nation where the most menial of tasks could be paid $15 an hour. But the problem with that is it does increase how much that company has to charge for its product. Now, when you throw in the overhead of building maintenance, the cost of the building itself, all the utilities, and then you add payroll, along with all of the product, running a restaurant is not a cheap proposition, even if you're hiring your staff at minimum wage. If you've been doing this, quote, minimum wage job for longer than a couple of years and you're still making minimum wage, then you're probably not very good at it. All the more reason to question whether you're even worth the $7.25 an hour. Now, I know there are a lot of people out there that are having a hard time making ends meet. I'm having a hard time making ends meet, and I know a lot of other folks out there have to be doing the same thing. They're struggling. So wanting a better wage, understandable. But it's still up to you to go out there and earn that better wage, either through working harder at your current job, finding a better job, finding a second job, or putting yourself through school so that you can earn a degree and increase your value, change your position. Because minimum wage jobs are minimum wage for a reason. But like I said, I've had a background. I've spent time as a manager in quick service restaurants, and I know for a fact that if you come in and you do a great job, even when you're working for a corporate structure restaurant, you come in and you do that work, even if you're hired at that lowest level, you will not be making that lowest level a year into your job. Will it be a huge raise? No, probably not. But again, the better job you do, the less likely they are to want to lose you, the harder they'll work to keep you. That's what you have to keep in mind. Also in the offbeat, let me ask you this. Do Beyonce and Jay-Z deserve praise for visiting Cuba? I mean, that question's out there, definitely in the offbeat section on the topics for today. Because, come on, why is anybody even talking about Jay-Z and Beyonce going to Cuba? Well, it's because they had a lot of nice things to say regarding how things went in Cuba while they were there. Now, personally, I would rather not even justify the conversation with bringing it up, but I had somebody point out to me that we should address it, especially in light of the Dennis Rodman visit to North Korea, and then all of a sudden North Korea ramps up all their crazy talk. It is an issue because they do, in fact, provide a certain amount of free propaganda that the communist country can use against both the U.S. and the rest of the world that has been kind of trying to isolate them. Never mind the fact that the level of atrocities that have been committed by this government against dissidents. Never mind the fact that millions of people have been killed in Cuba because they didn't agree with the Castros. Now, all this stuff is just ignored. The prettiest possible picture is put forth, and that's what gets talked about. Now, I don't know how much influence Jay-Z has outside of rap music, but I do know that Beyonce is a worldwide pop star, and there are certain low-information voters, certain low-information people who are fans of hers, and if she tweets out, oh, Cuba's great,
just talking about how beautiful the day might be that time, they're going to take it as meaning that that's a full-on endorsement of the country as a whole. Now, is that as bad as, I don't know, say, documentaries by certain Michael Moore-type directors who likened the Cuban healthcare system to being Nirvana, why the United States healthcare system is crap? Which one does more damage? I actually probably tend to think that the Beyonce thing does, because while there's folks who know who Michael Moore is, I don't think there's anybody out there that worships Michael Moore. I'm pretty safe in assuming that there probably is a ton of folks out there that worship Beyonce. At any rate, do they deserve praise for visiting? Of course they don't. They ignored protocols. They had to get special permission. And I think this is part of why this kind of is newsworthy, too. They were granted permission to visit Cuba for their fifth wedding anniversary. These celebrities who disregard the lives of millions by celebrating those who torment them deserve only our contempt upon their return home. If they knew the racism that was practiced on a daily basis against Cuban blacks, the couple would have perhaps thought twice about going to the island nation. So what do you do? Do we praise these people? No. Why would we even ask if they should be praised? Because there's some people who have been praising them for going out and doing what our government can't do, and that's reaching out. Reach out to the Cuban people. The Cuban people have been reaching out to our government for decades. That's why there's so many Cuban dissidents that are living still in southern Florida. They fought their way here to escape the oppressive regime that controlled things. No, we should not praise them. We should have contempt for the fact that they decided that Cuba is where they needed to go. It's absolutely without conscience. Also, quick news and notes for those of you who are not aware of it. There is a fast-tracked global entry program that the United States has put in place for frequent travelers. This global entry is designed so that people who often fly back and forth do not have to go through the same level of screening that we've seen our children, our disabled wheelchair people, our elderly, and who knows who else you've seen have to go through these screening, go through these nude body imagers, go through these aggressive strip searches, all this to try and improve travel. Well, this fast-track system has been put in place for certain nations where they agree that they'll be able to do this and establish it. It's called the Global Entry System, and basically we just call it fast-tracking. The State Department has decided that Saudi Arabia now should meet the criteria, and they want to go ahead and put Saudi Arabia in the Global Entry System. So that means any Saudi citizen who travels to the U.S. or who plans to travel to the U.S. on a frequent basis can apply for it, and it would be granted based on how often they'd be traveling or have traveled in the past. Problem with that is, first of all, that would still put them on the fast track ahead of France, Germany, Israel. And, let's not forget the fact that Saudi Arabia is where the majority of the 9/11 hijackers were from. They are the home country of the majority of people who have been linked to attempts at terrorist attacks here in the States. It's kind of a dangerous situation to say, okay, Saudi Arabia, you can have this fast-track status where you people can just show a little card or swipe a little card or whatever it is that you do to bypass the security checkpoints, and you just get to go right through. What happens, even if the traveler themselves is not a terrorist, what if they have terrorists that get at them? use their family for collateral, use their lives as collateral, do something to put fear in these people's lives. Bottom line is, fast-tracking anybody ahead of our known allies, first of all, is a bit presumptuous. Now, I'm sure the government, including the previous administration, along with this one, will swear to you up and down that Saudi Arabia is one of our allies, especially in the war on terror. And as far as the royal family and the government there is concerned, you might be able to make that argument, but it's a flimsy one at best. The bottom line is, America has been under attack from Saudi citizens more than from any other nation in the past two decades. So granting them a fast-track global entry position should be maybe rethought. At least I would recommend them rethinking it. Now, we're going to take another quick break, and when we get back, we're going to start on two stories that demonstrates media bias in a way that we don't normally get to talk about it. Most of the time when we talk about media bias, we talk about the stories that are being reported and the way that they are being reported, because it is very sad how these stories are often angled specifically. But when we get back, we're going to discuss a couple of stories that are demonstrating the media bias because they are not being reported. So we'll be right back.
Tap into the truth. Listen in live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog posts and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yes, that's right. Every Sunday at 3 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. Don't forget to follow the show while you're here checking us out. And don't forget to check out the show page where you can easily see all of our previous broadcasts. Check out some of our guests that we've had on, from former State Representative Julie Hurley all the way to Master Gunsmith Cody Stockton. And hear some of the callers that we've had call in the past. I always had an issue with callers wanting to call in the last few bits of the show. I don't know why that keeps happening. We bumped up to a two-hour format, and we still know that people are listening, know that people are following. But for whatever reason, folks tend to wait to the last minute to want to be heard. I don't know if they're just trying to avoid a rebuttal or if they want to have the last word of the day rather than having some other caller call in and get the last word on a message. But regardless of that, we do have a lot of things going on with the show. So we're going to talk about, well, first, I did say we were going to go ahead and get into the conversation about two stories where the media is refusing to report. But before we get into that, let's take another quick stab at something else that's made a lot of news. I'm not real certain exactly to what extent we should be overly concerned about it. I'll tell you my take on it after we listen to the promo spot, but I am indeed talking about Melissa Harris Perry and her little promo spot for her show on MSNBC called Lean Forward. She recorded a 30-second promo, and in that 30-second promo, a lot of funny things happened. A lot of conservatives got very upset at the overtones that existed within that spot. So let's go ahead, take a listen to that, and then we'll talk about that briefly.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the households, then we start making better investments.
Okay, so she's talking about how much money is being spent on the federal level on education. But what upset people is when she made this statement about essentially saying that your children belong to the whole community. She talks about collectivism a lot, and she has spoke a lot about collectivism, collective solutions, collective situations. And in case some of you may be new to politics, please understand that collective is code word for socialist. And in the collective community ownership of your children, it is their responsibility not only to help them to grow up, but also to indoctrinate them and inform them as far as what they should be doing and how they should be doing it. Ultimately, the real concern here is this sounds like socialist propaganda. It's a starting point. And whether beloved Melissa Harris Perry meant that she was going to come take your children or not, and I've heard her since then in her defense of her promo several times say that that's not the intention. What she needs to keep in mind is that has not been the intention on multiple occasions with many other people as well. And yet it's happened. We have to take each step forward in a rational way, and we have to make sure that there are no unintended consequences of any policy that we institute. Now, she is an educator, and she has been on the front lines of facing the battles and everything that it takes in order to become an educator and to do the job of educating. She went further to talk about how she would love not to have to grade papers and made the statement that she's not planning on adopting every kid she's had in her class and blah, blah, blah. Even went so far as to try to make some correlation to slavery. And the whole time, it's typical political backtracking and swinging to try and convince you that she's intellectually superior to you. So what she said, in order for it to be bad or wrong, can only be taken out of context. Well, you heard the spot for yourself. I heard the spot. I've heard it several times. I apologize for the sound quality on that. Didn't sound that bad when we played it earlier. But still, the statement's there. And again, does she have a point about our investment in education? Maybe so. There are a few places where we can really afford to skimp when it comes to government spending. Education is among them. But here's the biggest thing, and here's where Republicans take a lot of heat, and that is education is not a federal issue. Education has intentionally been left in the hands of local governments. Each state sets a set of standards, and then the counties, in most cases, cities in some cases, set their curriculum. They have to meet the state standards, but then they're free to educate however they feel appropriate. They are the ones that raise the money and pay for it, and if the state offers up grants and if the federal government offers up grants to help offset some of these costs, then that's great. And if you want to balance the budget and then you have additional funds available, then by all means, put that money into the hands of educators. Put that money into the hands of the administrators who are in charge of educating. Let them do their job and let's invest some more money into it. That's fine, but let's make sure we have the money first. And that's the whole point. Conservatives understand education is not a federal issue. Stop trying to make it one. It's not. It's a state's issue. And that's where it has to improve. Now, I want you to listen to this again very carefully This is Melissa Harris Perry's Lean Forward promo.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's responsibility and not just the households, then we start making better investments.
Now, again, she keeps trying to make it about how much money's being spent. But she overplays the hand. She makes the point that concerns us the most about true socialism, and that is once you start down the slippery slope, eventually you end up in a communist state. And in communist states, you don't get the choice of where you go to school. You don't get the choice of what career path you're going to follow. You don't get the choice of much of anything. A few bourgeois class, gifted, lucky few have some choices. But for the most part, when the community or the government, in the best interest of the community, makes more and more decisions on your behalf, you have fewer and fewer freedoms. That's why you got a lot of negative email, Miss Harris Perry. And that's why you will continue to do it regardless of what continues. All right, now let's go ahead and get into one of the three main topics of the day. This is a case where media propaganda and media bias is showing its head by how it's not being reported, at least on the national level. We're going to start with the story of how a Connecticut couple, a married homosexual Connecticut couple, have been charged with raping adopted children. What I'm going to do, I'm not going to mention these people by name. However, I am going to play for you the reported segment from a Fox affiliate in Connecticut. It's about 2 minutes, 20 seconds, and it is their rundown on the storyline, and then we will discuss it further from there. Folks, feel free to call in. Again, 800 number. Well, it's not 800 number, but it's toll-free, 888-287-5313. That number should be showing on the player if you're listening live. And also, if you have a cell phone for long distances and an issue, or you have Skype service where you can call specific numbers, if you have some type of service where you don't have to worry about paying for long distance, then I ask you to call our regular guest call-in line, and that is 347-426-3550. Now, here is that Fox Connecticut report.
Thanks for joining us tonight. A shocking change in a case involving allegations of sexual abuse against children.
A Glastonbury couple accused of putting their adopted children in harm's way should have been sentenced in a plea deal this afternoon, but new evidence unveiled in court today means they're probably heading for trial.
Fox Connecticut's Louisa Moeller breaks down this disturbing story.
A scramble to get in the car and no comment from two men who are wrapped up in a sexual abuse case. George Haraz and Douglas Worth, a married couple from Glastonbury, expected to be sentenced Friday for a plea of no contest to charges of risk of injury to a child. What they got was disturbing new testimony about what happened in their Glastonbury home and the possibility of a trial. It all started when Haraz and Worth adopted nine boys from the Department of Children and Families over a period of 10 years. They were painted as model parents by some until that image was shattered in 2011. Allegations surfaced that Haraz and Worth had sexually abused two of their nine children, and other biological relatives of the boys in the house say the situation was a nightmare. Just listen to this grandfather of three of the younger children.
They'll never have a normal childhood. They will, their whole childhood, like the oldest ones, has been taken away from them.
But when it got to court, the prosecutor said there was no forensic evidence to support the claims, and there were contradictions in the children's reports. What resulted was a plea deal, until new evidence came out at Friday's sentencing. A pre-sentencing investigation of the couple revealed that one of the child victims had new testimony. He told a DCF caseworker that he was raped at age 8 by Haraz, an event that he claims left scars on his thighs from the use of a weapon.
Listening to what, you know, what's been done and what's been said, it's really heart-wrenching.
Haraz and Worth had supporters testify to their innocence at the hearing, but that wasn't enough. The judge, prosecution, and defense all agreed that the case should go to trial to put all of the truth out in the open. A pretrial hearing is scheduled for June. Louisa Moeller, Fox.
All right, now that was how it's reported, and that is just about the only report you're going to find from any media outlet that is not a conservative-based website. Now, why is the mainstream media, especially the media at the national level, not reporting on this story? Well, you have a married homosexual couple. Here's my problem. The media has decided that this hurts the agenda, so they're not going to talk about it. We've seen cases like in the Trayvon Martin case where they used the term white Hispanic in describing our perpetrator and pushing the agenda. In this particular case, they don't want to talk about this because, first of all, you have gays involved, and second of all, you have married gays who have been permitted to adopt children. Now, these are still taboos in some states. But my problem here is the journalistic ethics. Journalism used to be about being a watchdog. You put pressure on the government or individuals that are part of government. You put pressure on business. You were looking out for the little guy. You didn't let the big guys take advantage. It's become more about pushing agendas. And this case demonstrates it quite clearly. Nobody in the media wants to talk about this nationally. If they were doing their job of watchdog, they would be asking the question of how a couple that has any of this going on, regardless of who the couple is, regardless of what kind of couple they are, how they manage to adopt 9 children, and how these 9 children are allowed to be around long enough, even after the allegations start. Why wasn't something done sooner? Why didn't somebody step in? But I'll go you even further. They were talking about this hearing that they were on their way to. They had agreed. Let me go through here just a little bit more. A judge last Friday allowed the two men accused 2 years ago of sexually assaulting 2 of their 9 adopted boys to withdraw their no contest pleas and to take their cases to trial. Now, here, even as this was written this way, they make it sound like it's the gentleman who wanted to withdraw their pleas. That ain't the case, boys and girls. The unusual action came during what has to be a sentencing hearing for the two gentlemen who entered pleas in January to 1 felony count each of risk of injury to a minor. They agreed to suspended prison sentences. The only issue for Friday's hearing was to be whether each would be required to register as sex offenders. That means, ladies and gentlemen, that had the question of sex offender registration hadn't been on the plate, that this deal would have already been done. New allegations of sexual assault against 1 of the 2 gentlemen by 1 of the victims contained in a pre-sentencing investigation basically helped to scrap the plea agreement. The case was further clouded Friday by disclosure in court of new allegations of abuse by 3 other of the 9 children, now meaning that 5 of the 9 are claiming to be assaulted. No new criminal charges have been filed as of yet, but they are expected to come. The new information gives rise to the possibility of new criminal charges and therefore continuing with Friday's planned sentencing would not have been prudent. Now, that was a quote from David Zegja. And he told Judge Joan Alexander that the victim has said he wants to testify against the two at trial. Also quoted as saying, "I think the only proper resolution of this matter is to try it." Initially, one of the two had been charged with two counts of first-degree sexual assault, aggravated first-degree sexual assault, fourth-degree sexual assault, and two counts of risk of injury to a minor and cruelty to persons. The other member of the couple was initially charged with third-degree sexual assault and risk of injury to a minor. All those charges were reduced to a single charge for each man as part of the plea agreement. Now, I don't know about you, but that seems like a pretty good plea deal that was cut down. Also, another big time story of failure on the media's part to report on a story comes from Pennsylvania. And again, they're choosing to report on the story based solely on the fact that it hurts the agenda. Listen to this.
Thank the gentleman from New Jersey for yielding, and appreciate his efforts to bring this attention, the attention of the American people, and also want to thank the gentleman from Maryland, Mr. Harris, who just spoke so eloquently and factually and knowledgeably about this particular issue as a doctor. And my heart is torn as I stand here on the floor here in the U.S. House of Representatives as we're discussing a matter that's happened right here in our own country. And I tell the gentleman from New Jersey that I was just meeting with a doctor in my office just a couple of hours, within the last couple of hours, who worked in one of the neonatal clinics in neurology. The ability and the effort that there's in a neonatal facility go through to save the life of a baby that is wanted is amazing and is heart-touching. And to then come to this particular matter and to hear the details of this tragic location in Philadelphia that was performing abortions like this is just heart-wrenching. And Mr. Speaker, I, you know, would just share with this body that, you know, certain places are permanent reminders that evil men will do evil things, whether it's in Auschwitz's ovens, Cambodia's killing fields, and now a run-down brick building on the corner of 38 and Lancaster in West Philadelphia. In that building, crawling with animals, reeking with urine and filled with blood-stained furniture, Kermit Gosnell was running a slaughterhouse. And on a regular basis, he used a pair of scissors to sever the spinal cords of helpless babies who were born alive during illegal late-term abortions. The loss of these lives should scar the conscience of civilized people everywhere. This is not a discussion about abstract concepts like choice. We are talking about brutal deaths of newborn children. Mr. Speaker, Kermit Gosnell is a predator who must be publicly exposed and openly denounced, and that's why I come to the floor, that to bring attention to this case, that the American people are informed of it, aware of it, and realizing the acts that are happening within our own country. I have no doubt that in this life or the next, he will be held accountable for his crimes. However, right in here and right now, we ought to take a serious look at our culture's careless disregard of this story in particular, and innocent life in general. How is it that in our age of constant news, Not a single major news outlet, not a single major news outlet has devoted serious attention to the atrocities that weren't committed halfway around the world, but in West Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Has our national conscience been irreversibly seared by the deaths of more than 1.2 million unborn children every year in this country? I believe this is something that the media should be talking about. They talk about so many other issues that affect our country, and rightly so. But I believe this is one of those that should be discussed and reported on by the media. I've only seen a brief report on this within the last week. So, Mr. Speaker, I'm confident that one day the era of abortion on demand will close, and we will restore a lasting respect for life. But however, until that day comes, each of us must take up the cause of those who cannot speak for themselves. I thank Congressman Smith for his unwavering commitment and his leadership and his efforts to protect life, and especially to bring this particular matter to the attention of the American people so that we as a country will stand up and do the right thing for those who cannot speak for themselves. With that, I'll yield back to the gentleman.
Thank you, Mr. Stutzman.
All right. Now, that was, of course, a speech given on the floor of the House of Representatives. Representative Stutzman from Illinois, I believe, was giving that speech. And it is a shame that it's necessary for our elected officials to have to go on C-SPAN in front of a mostly empty House chamber, I might also add, in order to talk about the horrific scene that Kermit Gosnell was involved with. Now, for those of you who may not know anything about what's going on with this storyline, well, it's not your fault, because again, the media is not covering it. The atrocities that were taking place in this man's so-called clinic go beyond heinous. We're talking about late-term abortions that are illegal in almost every state. We're talking about murders that have been committed. We're also talking about men facing murder charges now, not because of what he did to who knows how many infants that were born alive through his botched procedures, but because two women whom he treated died shortly after being treated. The background on this, you know, he's a doctor who ran two women's health clinics in Pennsylvania between 1972 and 2011. As of April of this year, he's on trial for first and third degree murder, illegally prescribing drugs, and related offenses. Following an FBI and DEA raid in 2010, Gosnell was arrested in January of 2011 and charged with 8 counts of murder resulting from gross medical malpractice in treatment of patients in his clinics. These related to a patient who died while under his care, 7 infants said to have been killed after being born alive, and illegal prescriptions for medication. Through his lawyer, Gosnell has denied all the accusations. The charge of murder was recommended by grand jury against Gosnell and several employees. CNN reported in March of 2011 that prosecutors were considering seeking the death penalty. A number of clinic employees had already pled guilty to similar charges in their trials, including charges of third-degree murder. Several had testified to snipping the spines of aborted fetuses or babies. One of these, Stephen Massoff, testified that he had personally done this over 100 times, describing it as a standard procedure at the clinics. Of course, the trial began back on the 18th, back in March. And it's just mind-boggling when you continue to hear more and more coming out of this trial. Descriptions of how his clinic looked, having a separate waiting room for certain members of his clientele. The bottom line is when you get into the very graphic description of the things that have been taking place, and I'm not about to go into the graphic detail. I don't want to glorify in any fashion the things that this man has done. He is beyond defense because what he did is so vile that it's hard to believe that he could even have a conscience. It's mind-boggling to me, too, though, that, again, where is the mainstream national media? The closest we've gotten to solid media coverage on this has come from op-ed pieces in USA Today and then from conservative news outlets, primarily blogs and news websites. The mainstream media doesn't want to report on it. Again, why? Because this can be used against the agenda, and the agenda of abortion on demand is the agenda that they push. They claim it's for choice, and they claim that it's about privacy. Well, you know, privacy might have been the grounds that Roe versus Wade was determined on, but the ultimate story there is that even the Supreme Court at that time said, if the legislature were to pass a law that granted personhood at conception, then all of this would be a moot point, because then and only then abortion would be completely illegal, with one exception, and that being that the pregnancy posed a threat to the mother's life. Because at that point, only self-defense becomes the only reason to violate that person's right to life. Now, nobody's bothered to push a law, and in fact, we finally have a Life at Conception Act being moved through the House. There's some question as to whether or not it would be held up as constitutional, but the Supreme Court's already ruled that it would be. Now, surely somebody will challenge it based on previous rulings, but the Supreme Court said in the Roe versus Wade decision that this is all it would take. They would immediately get 14th Amendment protections if their personhood was established at conception. Not to push too hard, too hot and heavy on the abortion issue, what's at true issue here is the media doesn't want to report it because of that. But what the media should be doing is reporting it, because somebody who's supposed to be inspecting the good doctor's facilities dropped the ball. Somebody who's supposed to be keeping an eye on the medical practicing dropped the ball. Same as the people that were overseeing the adoptions of these 9 boys to this gay couple in Connecticut. Somebody dropped the ball. How does one couple get 9 kids, regardless of what kind of couple they are, when there's suspicious activity going on? I want to know if the Connecticut Attorney General is going to go after whoever recommended approving these adoptions, because obviously one or two things were going. They were either completely snowed by this image that these two had put in place, or they were in fact pushing their own political agenda, saying, see, look, gay couples not only can be in great marriages, but they can be great parents when they're together. Here, this couple has 9 kids. They're doing a great job. If you were so blinded by pushing the agenda, then not only do you not deserve the job that you have, that maybe charges should be filed. But where's the media? Where's the media holding up the scrutiny to this person who recommended this? Where's the media holding up the scrutiny to the people that are responsible for inspecting the good doctor's facilities, for making sure that patients are not being put at risk, for making sure that illegal abortions, the late-term kind, are not taking place? There are so many more charges that should be filed here, and the media at the national level should be all over this, so that would put people on notice in other states where this is going on. And you know what has to be going on in other places? I mean, it's scary to think about. Nobody wants that to be the case, but you know it has to be. It has to be. Other people are doing this. This guy didn't just come up with the idea and get away with it for so long because he didn't have role models. Somebody else, somewhere else, is doing this too. They need to be put on notice, and that's why the media should be reporting the story, and they should not be pushing an agenda anyway, but we all know they are. So why not report it in a fashion that still works to protect the innocent? Why aren't you, mainstream media, working to protect the little guy? That's what journalistic ethics is supposed to be about. Where are you at on the story? Why aren't you reporting the story? Where are you? We've got to hunt to find these stories. They don't want to talk about it, just like they don't want to talk about the lives that are saved every day because somebody used a gun to protect themselves. They'd much rather tell you about how guns were responsible for tragedy as opposed to reporting on how guns helped to avoid tragedy. It works against the agenda, so they don't want to talk about it. They know most Americans are too lazy or not smart enough to understand. So you're not going to go out and find these stories. They're getting local coverage, and even organizations like Fox are dropping the ball at picking up the local reporting and putting it on nationwide. Again, because the media is pushing the agenda. I report this story on the married gay couple in Connecticut, not as an attack on the gay community. I don't believe it's my place to judge. What they do is their business. They'll have to answer for it on Judgment Day, not me. They're free to do what they want, within reason, of course, as long as it doesn't directly involve hurting other people. Your rights end where the next person's right begins. I think most people can agree with that. If you're gay and you want to get married, I don't have to like it, but it's not really any of my business. And if some state decides that they're going to acknowledge that, then that's just state civil union matter anyway. They've hijacked the word marriage. What they're talking about isn't really marriage. That's where I fall on that issue. They can do it all they want to. That's between them and the state. I don't have a dog in that fight. I'm not interested in that. I don't think it does a great deal to waste our time to take our eye off the political ball and argue about that with other Americans while they're getting away with pushing different forms of gun control. It's insane to think that the mainstream media has two stories like this, horrific stories, but because it might hurt the agenda, because the right-wing folks might use this to hurt the agenda, we're going to sit on it. We're going to keep it quiet. We don't want the low-information folks that are the only folks still paying attention to us anyway to get the idea that there could be something bad coming from this. We don't want them to think that the conservatives might be right about something. It's mind-boggling that they can get away with this, and for the most part, we let them. That's why several conservative news websites have this story out, have both stories out. That's why one columnist for USA Today came out and said, why isn't this front page news? She was right. Why isn't it front page news everywhere? Why isn't everybody talking about this? This is something Americans need to know about. Excuse me. Ultimately, we have to realize that media bias exists in two forms. Number one, how they report what they report, and number two, what they choose not to report. Now, today's primary topic, the reports on Obama's power grabs. We'll get to that right after this short break.
Tap into the truth. Listen in live every Sunday at 3 p.m. Check us out at tapintothetruth.com for our latest blog posts and for links to all of our past broadcasts. Don't forget to like us on Facebook and to follow us on Twitter. That's Tap Into the Truth every Sunday at 3 p.m.
Yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Every Sunday right here on Blog Talk Radio and through the week at other outlets. Let's go ahead and get into the meat and potatoes. And a reminder for anybody who wants to call and talk about any of the topics we've talked about today, or maybe even something we haven't talked about today but is on your mind, that toll-free number to call in at is 888-287-5313. And if you have Skype or a cell phone where you don't have to worry about long-distance calls or whatever, please, I ask you to call in on our regular call-in number. That is 347-426-3550. The primary purpose of today's show was to talk about a little bit of good news, believe it or not. Ted Cruz, Texas Senator, has released his inaugural report on the Obama administration's unprecedented attempt to expand federal power. He addresses some cases here. The legal limit the Obama administration attempts to expand federal power, report item number one. In the U.S. Supreme Court, they rejected Obama administration's Department of Justice expansive view of federal power. The Ranking Committee of the Senate Judiciary Subcommittee on the Constitution, Civil Rights, and Human Rights, Ted Cruz, released this report. And although the Obama administration, through its Department of Justice, has repeatedly advocated a radical theory of sweeping federal powers, the administration's view of federal power is so extreme that since January of 2012, the U.S. Supreme Court has unanimously rejected Department of Justice arguments for more federal power 6 specific times. Notably, 4 justices who were nominated by Democratic presidents denied the Obama administration's overreaches. President Obama picked 2 of them himself. When the administration can't get even a single one of the liberal justices to agree with it in these unrelated areas of law, that's a sign there's something wrong with its constitutional vision. The Obama's Department of Justice were successful in its cases, the federal government would have the power to, okay, if, I want to make sure I'm really clear on this, if Obama's DOJ had been successful in these cases, the federal government would now have the power to attach GPS to a citizen's vehicle to monitor his movements without having any cause to believe that that person has committed a crime. That's part of the United States versus Jones, in case you want to look that up. They would also have the authority to deprive landowners of the right to challenge potential government fines as high as $75,000 per day, and take away their ability to have a hearing to challenge those fines. That was part of Sackett versus the EPA. They also would have the power to interfere with the church's selection of its own ministers. That's the Hosanna Tabor Evangelical Lutheran Church and School versus the EEOC. They'd also have the authority to override state law whenever the president desired. That's Arizona versus the United States, in case you're wondering. Dramatically extend statutes of limitation to impose penalties for acts committed decades ago. That's Gabelli versus the SEC. and to destroy private property without paying just compensation. That's the Arkansas Fish and Game Commission versus the United States. The arguments advanced in these cases demonstrate an astonishing view of federal power on behalf of the occupier's administration, worthy of further examination. If the Department of Justice had won these cases, the federal government would be able to electronically track all of our movements, define us without a fair hearing, to dictate who churches choose as ministers, to display state laws based on whoever's occupying the White House and what they're feeling at the moment, to bring debilitating lawsuits against individuals based on events that occurred years ago, and to destroy a person's private property without just compensation. Luckily, we do not have to live in that America, at least not yet. The framers of our Constitution created the separation of powers to ensure that judicial power checks executive power, and that the U.S. Supreme Court did just that when it unanimously rejected the Obama administration's far-reaching positions in these six cases, decided in just over the past year. Now, this is an outstanding start. This means that the Supreme Court is still doing its job. It's still taking itself seriously for what its role is, and it is still paying attention, at least to some extent, to the Constitution. I'm very happy about this, and I think this is a great report. It's good for us to know that there are still semblances of our representative republic, our constitutional republic, that are maintaining some semblance of freedom here, that we're not allowing the government to just start doing what it wants to unchecked. The balance of power is still being accepted as a role for at least one of the three branches. The legislature at the federal level has almost completely capitulated its authority in the check and balance process. There are some mostly newly elected members of the House that are in fact trying to return that level of check and balance to the legislature. But unfortunately, we have too many people that aren't willing to do what needs to be done that are still sitting in the House. For example, we had a group of 16 Republicans vote to prevent an attempt at a filibuster over some of the new gun control measures that are slated to be voted on this week. They wanted to do the filibuster because they wanted to make sure that everything was brought to light about these, and it has a lot to do with the registry process. I was very saddened to see that two senators from my home district, Bob Corker and Lamar Alexander, were among the 16 that voted to prevent any further discussion and to take the votes to go ahead and take the vote to the floor. It is shameful that these people would side with the gun control advocates rather than let the people have a fair opportunity to hear what's being said. It's not like a true filibuster would have changed much anyway. So let these gentlemen do their patriotic duty in making sure that everyone has a chance to not only read the bill that you gentlemen needed to make sure you were reading, but also so that everyone gets to hear both sides of the discussion. This argument has been clearly dominated, again, by the media and its bias. As far as what the American people hear, they think, hey, this is a great compromise. Hey, it's bipartisan because at least one Republican is down with it. That's not what's going on here, ladies and gentlemen. And we have to be extremely cognizant of the fact that these particular Republicans, for whatever reason, have in essence betrayed the American people because they sidestepped the procedures and the rules that govern how our legislative body is supposed to work in order to further the agenda. And the agenda is total gun compensation. I mean, that is the ultimate goal. That is what they're working for, and they have multiple streams that they're working on at one time. These Republicans, if they don't want to vote against this bill, they still should have let Rand Paul and the other Republicans who were set to attempt this filibuster to have their chance to do so. Because if you're right, and these are indeed reasonable compromises, the only thing that's going to be accomplished by a filibuster is bringing more attention to it, and more people will agree. Here's the thing, though, folks. If they don't want a filibuster, then they don't want a discussion. And if they don't want a discussion, then they know there's something in it somewhere that they're afraid the American people will find out and then suddenly would not support them. So what is it? What's going on with this bill that they don't want us to have enough time to find out until after they voted on it? So much easier, of course, it is to say you're sorry than to ask for permission. We have got to instill back into these elected officials the fact that they work for us. They don't work for whatever special interest group happens to be lining their pockets at the moment. They do not work for themselves. We certainly do not work for them. They work for us, the American people. We are the boss, and each and every one of us has to take a long, hard look at each and every member that we send to represent us at each and every level. Whether you're talking about county commissioners, whether you're talking about state representatives, whether you're talking about the governor of your state, whether you're talking about U.S. representatives, senators, or even the president of the United States, whoever you're talking about, it's up to us to make sure that we fully vet who these people are, that we make sure that we know who they are, what they stand for, what they're really up to, what are they going to do. Then we have to make sure that everybody we know knows the truth once we find out. We can't allow the age of the low information voter to continue, because that is really what's destroying our country. We have generation upon generation of people now who've grown up in the welfare system, so that's all they know. They don't have a sense of pride anymore that would want to get them off of it. They don't understand why their grandparents or even their parents worked so hard to try and get off of the welfare, and the situations may have never arose because they didn't have the educational background to get away from it. They don't understand that. They don't know that. They don't have that pride anymore. There's no shame in accepting it. And you know what? If you need help and you need to fall back on that safety net, then you really shouldn't be ashamed. You should do what you need to do to provide for your family. But you still should have some sense of pride where you want to provide for your family yourself. You do not want to depend on the government to do it. Because when you depend on government agencies, all they're going to do is to continue reaching inside your life and taking away your freedoms and taking away everything that you could possibly work hard to achieve, everything that you could possibly be proud of in your life, and they're going to take that from you. They don't want you to have choices. They want to control you. They want to use you for their numbers and their elections so that they can pretend like they're legitimate. But it's the same as every other fake democracy around the world. Hugo Chavez, for example, before his untimely demise, untimely in the eyes of certain people, he was a pretend elected official. That's what we have to fight against, ladies and gentlemen. Just as another example of what happens when you depend on government agencies to do their job, let's talk about the FCC for just a moment, shall we? In case you haven't heard, the FCC is contemplating allowing full frontal nudity and the use of the F word on broadcast TV. In a public notice last week, the Federal Communication Commission announced that it is now considering relaxing its indecency standards to allow broadcast of the F-word, as well as other presently banned profanity. and full frontal nudity. Now, the FCC's press release is on their website, so feel free to check it out. The FCC purported excuse for rethinking this indecency standard is compliance with the vital First Amendment principles as established by recent Supreme Court cases. It also wants to reduce its backlog of thousands of indecency complaints. Essentially, the FCC is contemplating allowing pretty much any profanity as long as it's isolated. In other words, it can't be repetitive or used in a patently offensive manner. Not sure how you manage that. And in similar fashion for nudity, as long as it's isolated and non-sexual, the FCC is contemplating allowing it on the airwaves. Now, here's the real question, as far as that goes. How do you define isolated? I mean, do you really want to see an episode of, I don't know, let's just say Big Bang Theory, where Sheldon hops up because of some crazy thing going on in his bedroom and he's not wearing his pajamas? Huh, you really want to see that, ladies and gentlemen? That's not sexual, but he can be completely nude. And the FCC says that's okay. Now, did you catch what the excuse was? The purported excuse for rethinking its indecency standard is compliance with vital First Amendment principles as established by recent Supreme Court cases. But here's the truth. It wants to reduce its backlog of thousands of indecency complaints. It doesn't want to do its job and take the time to go through these complaints. Now, to add injury to insult, the FCC doesn't seem to mind that the new indecency standards would be applied to all hours of broadcasting, even those most frequently watched by children. Now, this is not a final decision, and they have on their website a place where you can submit your comments. Just when you go there, enter 13-86 as the proceeding number, and then enter your comments. That, to me, is a perfect example of what happens when you let government agencies have more power and more authority. They have the ability to decide for themselves. Now, this basically came as a result, ladies and gentlemen, of them deciding to reduce the standards for the purposes of taking a look at their backlog that they already have. By doing those things alone, they were able to throw out nearly a million complaints, almost 70% of their backlog, just gone like that. Now, they did that. They have already done it once without public comment, without permission from the president, without permission from anyone else. They just said, okay, this was a complaint. This may have or may not have legitimately happened. We don't care. We don't want to deal with it. We're going to pretend like here's a new set of rules. And when they saw how quickly their load lightened, how quickly their job was now suddenly done, and now they can pat themselves on the back and recommend each other for bonuses, well, why don't we just do this all together? At this point, ladies and gentlemen, what is left? Because, I mean, sorry, once you have the full frontal nudity on, hello, it really is only going to be a matter of time before they take back the isolated and non-sexual content part of it. You can see it coming. The playbook has been used for a while now, and here's what it is. And they were hoping that this would stay quiet, and if they didn't have very many negative comments, they could proceed unfettered. What they didn't realize is that there are legitimate watchdogs still keeping an eye on them. That's what mainstream media is supposed to be doing. Hello, mainstream media. Reporting this is part of your job. Where are you at on this story? Again, promoting the agenda. They want to decimate traditional family values because traditional family values get in the way of them promoting the state as their leader. You get rid of freedom. You get rid of religion. You get rid of independent thought, and then suddenly you have the mindless sheeple that you can control. That's the agenda, ladies and gentlemen. That's the goal. Make no mistake about it. And this is what happens when you let a government agency have that much power over its own agenda. Also, this past week, we hear it tap into the truth, as do a lot of conservatives around the world, mourn the loss of Lady Margaret Thatcher. She was the fearless conservative who served as the United Kingdom's first female prime minister. The Iron Lady has died at the age of 87 after suffering a stroke. Baroness Thatcher will be missed. She was a lady of uncommon strength and uncommon good sense. She truly was the Iron Lady. However, it is absolutely appalling and disgusting to us here at Tap Into the Truth, both me on the front and those who work with the show behind the scenes, to see the kind of almost jovial fair that took place around reporting the story of her death. Lots of the so-called progressives were celebrating her passing. I saw articles that tried to blame England's current economic issues on Miss Thatcher's policies because she refused to take a leftist approach and moved more towards a privatization approach. Common sense, competitiveness. She had a strong relationship with Ronald Reagan, although they weren't always that tight. The U.S. didn't exactly instantly back Thatcher and the U.K. when they were battling Argentina over the Falkland Islands. She didn't, and I don't think she ever did come around to the quick strike invasion of the island of Grenada, which Reagan ordered in order to protect American college students there from a communist-style Marxist takeover. But there was one thing that she, Reagan, and Pope, the Pope of the time, did, is they stood together as a triumvirate against evil. And they called evil out by name, and they promoted the virtues of capitalism and of conservatism and why those things have worked in the past and why they will always continue to work when they are done. They put a name to the faces of evil, and they stood up against them, and they refused to back down, and they did not sell out on principles. Sometimes they made a wrong call, but they still stood by it, and when it was all said and done, if something had been a mistake, they admitted to it. So for all these people that are partying over Margaret Thatcher's death, you're the worst kind of scum, okay? You are. If you're happy that she's gone, there's something wrong with you. And what is wrong with you is that somehow you've let these so-called progressives wrap their little worms inside your brain and turn it into mush. She led the nation during a very tough time, and the country was better for it, and the United States was better for it, and the world was better for it. That's today's show, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for listening in. I want to go ahead and remind you to check out tapintothetruth.com. That's T-A-P-P, into the truth, all one word, .com. Also, check us out on Facebook, like the page, follow us on Twitter, follow the show here, follow the show on our other media outlets, and just remember, you know, please, don't take my word for it. Please, please, please don't take their word for it. Take some time, do a little research for yourself, find out the truth about what we're talking about here, what they're talking about. Use your brain. That's what you have it for. And remember, no matter what else, never accept the headline as being the whole story, because it's not. Most headlines are written to get your attention and usually slanted from whatever the agenda angle is. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you very much for listening. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll be back next week. Goodbye.